Hey there, and welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're diving into Thomas Carlyle's The French Revolution. Sophie, have you ever read something that feels less like history and more like a thunderstorm?
Oh, totally. And that's exactly what Carlyle gives us. This isn't a dry textbook. It's like he grabbed the revolution and shook it until the blood and fire spilled onto the page. I mean, he wrote it in 1837, and it still feels alive.
Yeah, it's wild. He doesn't just tell you what happened. He makes you feel like you're there, in the streets of Paris, with the crowd surging toward the Bastille. I remember reading the part where they storm it, and I was actually holding my breath.
Right, and that's because Carlyle is a poet as much as a historian. He uses this intense, almost prophetic language. But what's really fascinating is his take on why it all happened. He starts with the rotten old regime, a system so unequal it was bound to collapse.
And the king, Louis XVI, wasn't even a tyrant. He was just weak and indecisive. The guy was more into locksmithing than ruling. Can you imagine? The fate of a nation hanging on a guy who'd rather tinker with keys.
And then there's Marie Antoinette. Carlyle doesn't paint her as a villain. Just attached and frivolous, a symbol of everything the people hated. Meanwhile, the state is bankrupt because the rich refuse to pay taxes and the poor are starving. Bread prices soar, and then comes the famine of 1788.
So the king calls the Estates General to fix the money problem, and it just blows up in his face. The Third Estate, the commoners realize they're never going to get a fair deal. So they break away and declare themselves the National Assembly. Then they take that famous oath on a tennis court.
The tennis court oath. It's this incredible moment of unity and courage. They promise not to disband until France has a constitution. But the king starts gathering troops around Paris, and the people fear a crackdown. So on July 14th, 1789, they storm the Bastille.
And Carlyle makes it so visceral. The governor gets killed, and his head is paraded on a pike. It's not a strategic victory, but it's a symbolic one. It proves the king can be defied, and the old order is vulnerable. And then the whole country erupts.
Yeah, the great fear sweeps through the countryside. Peasants burn chateaus and destroy feudal records. And in Paris, they form the National Guard under Lafayette, the American Revolution hero. For a moment, it looks like the revolution might be peaceful. The king even wears the tricolor cockade.
But then the king tries to flee. He and his family get caught at Varennes in 1791, and Carlyle sees that as the turning point. The king revealed himself as an enemy, and the revolution loses its innocence. From then on, it's a struggle for survival.
Exactly. And that's when things start to spiral. The Legislative Assembly, then the war with Austria and Prussia, which goes badly. The people of Paris rise up again, storm the Tuileries, and massacre the Swiss guards. The monarchy is suspended, and France becomes a republic.
But the republic is born in violence, and it's divided. You got the moderate Girondins and the radical Jacobins, led by guys like Robespierre, Danton, and Marat. They're idealists, but they're ruthless. The king gets put on trial and executed by guillotine in January 1793.
And that's when the terror begins. The Committee of Public Safety, with Robespierre at the helm, starts eliminating enemies left and right. The guillotine becomes the symbol of the Republic, and it claims thousands of victims. Even Marie Antoinette, even the Girondins, even Danton himself.
I think the part that got me was how the terror consumed its own children. No one was safe, not even the revolutionaries. Carlyle doesn't give a simple reason. He suggests it's the logical outcome of destroying all authority and having nothing but the will of the people.
And Robespierre, this man of rigid virtue, believed terror was necessary to establish virtue. But his paranoia turned him into a tyrant. Eventually, the convention turns on him, and he's executed in July 1794. The terror ends, but the revolution doesn't.
Right? You get the Directory, which is corrupt and ineffective. And then Napoleon steps in, this brilliant young general, and takes over in 1799. Carlyle doesn't see him as the savior or destroyer of the revolution. He's the heir, the one who consolidates its gains while discarding its ideals.
So the revolution that started with liberty, equality, fraternity ends with an emperor. But Carlyle doesn't just condemn it. He sees it as a divine judgment on the old regime and a moral lesson. It shows that humans aren't naturally good or rational. Pursuing justice without mercy leads to destruction.
Yet he also sees a terrible beauty in it. The revolutionaries were driven by a genuine love of humanity. They abolished feudalism, established equality before the law, proclaimed the rights of man. Those achievements became the foundation of the modern world.
And that's the paradox, isn't it? The revolution was a catastrophe, but it was also a triumph. It was the birth pangs of the modern world, and we're still living in its shadow. Carlyle makes us feel the weight of that history, not as abstraction, but as lived experience.
For me, the takeaway is that revolutions are made by human beings, not abstract forces. With all their strengths and weaknesses, their hopes and fears. And that's a warning and an inspiration. It warns us about utopianism, but it also shows us the power to imagine a better world.
And honestly, if you want to go deeper into the revolution or any other topic, the whole library's over on 7minutebooks.com/app with over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language. It starts at $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 once for lifetime access. But really, Carlyle's book is a reminder that history is not a tidy sequence of causes and effects. It's a living, breathing catastrophe that reveals the deepest truths about human nature. And that's a lesson we never stop needing. We'll see you in the next one.